Can I borrow $100, Allie?
I can't even believe we're going to do this episode.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are. We're going to probably catch some flack from somewhere on this one, but whatever.
Buckle up.
Buckle up is right. So we, so it kind of, there's been a lot of things that I've seen, obviously in the news, in articles, educational articles, but I think the one thing that provoked the topic for this episode was a student asked me this question. And that question is it worth the money to become a teacher? And it stopped me right in my tracks because I knew what my thoughts and answers were about it. And then I'm thinking, how much do I want to shield this kid? Does he want to become a teacher? Does he, you know? And then I just opened up. But before I get there, what do you think, Allie?
All I know is I feel like we are sitting down at, like, you know, the family dinner table, or like you're with friends and we're bringing up one of those taboo topics that, you typically try to avoid, right? Yep. So it's like religion, politics, and money. Mm-hmm. And we decided that, you know, to have an open conversation about, is teaching worth the money? And to get people who, you know, if you're in education, like, you probably have an opinion about this. And if, you know, you're kind of outside of the system, haven't been in it, you know, it's pretty culturally, like, it's like a pretty common joke to be like, haha, teachers don't make any money. Pretty standard. I've heard it so many times where it's like, you know, why did you go into teaching? You know, I would be very wealthy if I collected a dollar for every time I got asked that question. You know, and I can remember so many students, especially, I feel like as the years went on, I felt more empathy from students being like, why are you asking our teacher to do that? They don't get paid enough. Or like, I would get a little mm-hmm. more sympathy from parents being like, we know you aren't compensated well.
Right.
I mean, it's public information. You can, public school teacher, like, you can go online and you can find what any public administrator, coach, yep. teacher, mm-hmm. paraprofessional, anybody in that system makes annually. Mm-hmm. It's not a secret. And it does vary significantly state to state, district to district, region to region. Right. And so, yeah, we're going to go there.
We're already in it. We jumped in. So
what would you say mm-hmm. to that student? Like, you know, I mean, your initial thoughts were like, oh, I need to get more information. But like, ultimately, you know, what's your flash in the pan thought of, is teaching worth the money?
I had to really think about my values. And it made me like kind of rethink my values, which I rethink a lot as an educator. As it's changing so fast and everything. I told the young man this. I was like, look, I can make a lot more money elsewhere. But it's my choice. So I'm not going to like, now, is it right or wrong? No. And I said, you can look up my salary right now. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, it'll come up from last year's salary. And the other thing that I let this young guy know is this. I was like, if you want to be a teacher, or anybody wants to be a teacher, number one, understand that you have got to have a drive behind you that is bigger than money, unfortunately. And that's what you have to have, right? I'm not excusing the low pay that we get, but I'm just saying you have to understand it before you go into it. And if you still want to go into it, understanding that there are some different values here. You're helping people. You really, I mean, you have to be a people person. You have to, you know, be able to work with people who are not willing to work with you. Like you have to, and you know, all types of personalities, not just, you know, six of the 16, you gotta work with all of them and do all these things and not necessarily get paid as much as you think you should. You should become a teacher. But I also said, if you don't have the funding or somebody is paying for your post-secondary education, here's the route I would take. Go to a community college for the cheapest one that you can. Get the best grades that you can in those courses. Try to get a scholarship to the next 2 years or 1 year, depending on the community college you go to, at a state institution that's not going to charge you that much, which you're in state. And then I would say it's probably worth it. If you're going to go to a private school to get an education degree, I'm sorry, it's not worth it if you're paying for it. It's just not. It's not. If you're looking at strictly cash money, right? Yeah. I know teachers right now are into their 40s who are still paying college loans off.
Yep.
In their 40s. So yep. To me, that's like, no way. Now, I was privileged enough where my grandfather paid for my education. But when I went back to get my education certificate, which I had to go back to do, I paid for it, but it wasn't, you know, a 4 year. It was like a 1.5 year. And that didn't cost as much. So, yeah, I don't know. That's what I told them. And then I told them what I made. I was like, either you look it up or I'm just going to tell you. And by the way, that was with an overload because I'm teaching one extra class this year because we don't have enough teachers to hire in. And he was like, that's with an overload? I'm like, yeah.
Yep. I remember getting the question from students a lot, you know, like, why do you teach her? You know, is it worth it? And what it comes down to for me, what it came down to for me is you can't put a price tag on knowing that your skill set is designed to help people learn and grow. And for me, it was so, and it is still so natural to help people understand the world through a scientific lens. And when you understand that that is a gift that you have, it would be nice, of course, to, like, you know, make a lot of money. But I would always tell students, I said, money will not bring you happiness. Mm-hmm. It will not. It will give you choices,
right?
But it will not bring you happiness. And so for me, I felt like I made enough to pay my bills and travel and do the thing, buy the things that I wanted to do. And I had enough. Like, I didn't have extra. I didn't, you know, I would work extra jobs for what I would call fun money. But when you wake up and love what you do, the money is aside from it. You know, do I think educators are wildly underpaid? Yes, 100% for the work that we do. But so many stay with it because they love, like, there isn't another job that would be as fulfilling. And so, is teaching worth the money? If you love it, you will answer yes to that question,
right?
And it will keep you in it for years and years, because for many teachers, you are making a livable wage. Like, it's not glamorous wage by any stretch of the imagination, but it's livable. And so it's just like, where do you, and this is, I think for anybody kind of listening to this, you know, whether you're in school or you're in education, you're outside the system, it's like, are you kind of doing what you love? And the money will follow. Like, you can always make more money. You can laser focus on your career, and you can give up a lot of other things in your life. I was actually reading this really interesting article about goals shouldn't be like your main focus, because like it can cause you to like be blinded by other things. Like, you know, we live in a goal setting world, and you know, if it's been proven, like if you aim at something, you will more likely hit it. And but what kind of gets lost when you laser focus on something? So if you're laser focused, like I'm going to make $1 million, you'll probably achieve that. But right. What's the cost? What's the cost of it? And I will say that the cost of teaching, though, like you are giving up a lot of your time to serve other people in the career. So it's like, but if that's your passion, that's your joy, then it will be worth it.
Right.
If it's not, probably not the career path for you.
I will say, like in certain parts of this country, in the United States here, like there are teacher salaries below the livable wage, right? There are. And actually, I read an article where as inflation blew up post-COVID, one teacher, I can't remember where she was. I think it was in Texas. But her wage was falling below the poverty line. And she found herself digging, like she could pay for rent and car and then some food, but not all. And then everything else came out of her savings. And that's a below a livable wage, right? And I'm telling you this, obviously this person isn't driving around in like a Porsche or anything like that, right? Like, you know, this is an apartment. This is a single teacher. And she wrote a great article about it. And she was like, well, you have a choice then, right? You leave and go do something else. Or you stay and then you work a side hustle, which a lot of people are working side hustles. And, you know, we'll talk about tutoring and all these different things as well. But, and so that's a fact. And I don't want to discredit, like, you know, there are, you know, I would say a lot of school districts do pay a livable wage, but there's a lot out there that don't. They, you know, they were building housing for teachers in different areas and they're patting themselves on the back. And I'm like, well, why don't you just give them a livable wage? Don't build houses for your teachers. Right. Like that's a little bit like you're in kind of some sort of labor camp, you know, where you're working and you have to live here because you can't live anywhere else. You know, that's it gives me an icky feeling inside. So I think that's, you know, that's one thing to really look at where you want to teach. You know, what are the salary requirements? I have left high paying teaching gigs because of toxic culture. Like you said, though, like I didn't enjoy it. Like it was not like I was stifled in my creativity. And so where I teach now, I do not make as much as where I taught before. But here's the other thing is be ready if you are in a school district, right? And again, I like how we open this whole thing where we're kind of answering a question of a student, but we kind of want to answer the question to the listeners is if you are looking at going into education or teaching, you know, after about year 5 to 8, you don't move. You typically, like you move a district, you start to lose money.
Yep.
And even with your experience, no one cares, right?
You know.
And you know, I mean, I chose to do that, and it, you know, I don't blame anybody for it. But yeah, I lost a significant amount of my salary. But you know, do I like where I'm at right now? Yeah, you know, most days it's fun, you know, it's not, I'm not going to say it's not hard, but so I think, you know, going into like, you know, monetarily, you have to look at things. You know, I'm a business teacher, so I'm always looking, are you going to cover the bills? Are you making more than you're spending? those types of things. And even as it goes into preparation for that. And then, you know, I kind of like where you took it is, you know, are you satisfied? Are you really, really happy? And happiness will make the money come, right? Money won't make the happiness come long term, maybe short term. So, and I can't remember, what was his name? The guy who just passed away, he was Halliburton's right-hand man for, what's his name? Oh, the big wealthy old guy. But he passed away. He was 99 years old, a billionaire. And he lived in the same house for 70 years and is not a big house. I mean, we're talking about like a ranch, you know, and he always said that people who build bigger homes for themselves and live in them get unhappier as the bigger they get. And I was like, that's interesting. I mean, here's a billionaire lives, you know, like it was Warren Buffett's right hand man. I can't remember what the gentleman's name was. He's like in all his books and on podcasts and stuff, but he passed away 99 years old, 70 years lived in the same home. So, I mean, if you're looking for money, like teaching may not be the place for you. I would say it's not. I'll be honest. I'm like, it's not. It's not the place to get money.
This is where I think you're going to be surprised by where I'm going to take this.
Let's
Listeners
go.
Are going to be too. So I'm going to preface this with like, I, you know, our phones are listening to us. Mm-hmm. I believe that. So it was after me and you were having this conversation of is teaching worth the money that mm-hmm. on my like daily like Google News feed, there was an article and it was Yahoo Finance. And it was basically like, you know, where do US millionaires come from? And like, what careers are come and have the most, make the most millionaires?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, I'm curious. It's going to be, you know, doctors, lawyers, and like, you know, the traditional ones that you think of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm reading this and here are the top five careers that produce the most millionaires. And this is from the article then linked like a bunch of different studies and it ultimately came down to, if you want to look this up, the National Study of Millionaires. And it came out in April of 2023, right? So it looked at over 10,000 millionaires, which it was the largest like amount of millionaires kind of like studied or asked like, and they have a whole bunch of statistics, but the most millionaires were accountants. I was not surprised by that,
right.
Actually. I don't know
Keeping
why, but
score.
management,
mm-hmm.
engineers, lawyers, and teachers.
Interesting.
And I was like, wait, what? Like, you're going to need to rewind this a little bit because I was kind of surprised. You know, millionaires, okay, like you can keep track of, you know, money. Engineers, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, I feel like you're just going to engineer your way to making $1 million. Lawyers, okay, that doesn't surprise me.
Sure.
But teachers was definitely like the surprise in there. And what the article kind of went on to say is that a third of millionaires, and also let me preface this with 80% of these people did not inherit, like they're self-made millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
So most millionaires, it's not like you inherited the money, but a third of these people never made more than six figures in any one year. So they got really good
mm-hmm.
at managing money.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, thinking about some of my teacher friends who they play the long game, they understand delayed gratification, the same principle that can be applied to, you know, like weight training, you know, like mm-hmm. you're playing the long game with that in order to be strong for a lifetime by doing the reps, you know, multiple times a week, is the same thing with money. And teachers do typically have a good retirement system if you put into it, like a
right.
good 401k or
right.
whatnot. Traditionally, you know,
mm-hmm.
like obviously it totally is state dependent and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I thought that article was super interesting because I know some retired teachers who are most likely millionaires because of the, I wouldn't even call it pinching pennies. It's like this, the guy that you mentioned, which I can't think of his name either,
right.
but it is, it's living within your means. It's spending less than you make and being organized, having a system.
Right.
And I will say, like, if anybody can kind of have be organized and have a system, it's teachers. So that skill set that educators have in the classroom to manage people and personalities and take what they are given and make the most out of it. So educators are very good at that. Seems to be a trait very common among millionaires.
Yeah. Love that twist, by the way. Let's first identify what a millionaire is. It doesn't mean I have $1 million in cash, by the way. It's assets. And they can be liquid or they can be, you know, non-liquid assets. So I can live in a house that, you know, maybe I lived in and for, you know, 20 years and I bought the house for $100,000 and it's worth $300,000 now. So that's one, right? So understand that. And I don't like when business people or students are like, yo, Elon Musk has got a billion. Why doesn't he just give, you know, 400,000 or 400 million to this? I'm like, because he can't, because it's wrapped up in, you know, other assets, right? So that's one thing. The second thing, which it makes sense now that you say it, because, and this is lifestyle, it's a lifestyle choice. And also, when do you spend, do you remember when you spent most of your money when you were teaching? Do you remember what time of year?
The summer.
And why was that?
Of freedom.
Yeah, right. So when you are at school, you have zero time to spend money, right? Like, it's true. Yep. It's true. It doesn't make it right, like, you know, how much we get paid. But like my summertime spending goes way up, way up. And then during the school year, like, you do not like spend money. You just don't, right? We usually pack a lunch. I mean, I pack a lunch every day. And then if you're coaching, if you're working, you know, events or whatever, you get these little extra pieces here and there. And again, if you're willing to play that long game, like you're saying, right, you're going to, and again, the reason I tell young people, if you want money, most of them failed the marshmallow tests, right? They want the marshmallow now, right? You guys can look up the marshmallow test for those who don't know it. But they want instant gratification. I want to sign up for a job that's going to pay me $90,000 right off the bat. And yes, there are some out there. There's a lot out there, actually. This ain't one of them. But if you play the long game, right, you can make up in certain districts up into like high 90s, low 100s. And then depending on where you are, what is the retirement benefit like, right? So there are these benefits. So if you play it right, I would guess that makes sense. I know a lot of teachers, when they get to a level where they're comfortable or their kids are out of school and they paid for college, or they know, because honestly, we know, I did a 529 with my son and daughter, meaning like we had set aside money for school. We understand the systems and how to do that. So I would fair to say that teachers really understand how to take a look at that next level, which is a huge expense these days, and how to play that game. But when I see a lot of other educators, what they have done is they've invested, right? I have a 403B. Like, I invest in that even though I'm getting a pension. And then there's also, well, maybe we're getting a pension. I live in Illinois, so who knows if that thing's going to go away. But I've also seen when you get to a point investing your money into other properties and such. I've seen teachers become real estate agents and off the side hustles. So yeah, that does make sense now that you said that. I never thought of that though. But I think when people go into places, and this next generation, or maybe a couple of generations, don't want to wait for that, don't want to put in the time, then I think we got a problem, right? So there's got to be other enticements is it worth the money? Long game, I think a lot of things are worth the money. Short game, I would say no way. No way. I don't know. I hope that's not a cop-out answer. So,
I mean, it is if you want it to be, like, if it matches your values, if it matches the lifestyle that you want.
Right.
Because there are very few jobs where, especially if, and it's definitely appealing to people who have young children,
mm-hmm.
and they want to either have their kid match their schedule. They want to have summers off with their kids mm-hmm. and families. Like,
right.
You can't really put a price tag on, like, the time freedom
mm-hmm.
that teaching can allow. And we 100% teachers work way more than we put in a year's worth of work in the 9 months of school. And then even during the summers,
it's 10 now, by the way. I only get, it's only, yeah.
That's true.
It's 10 months for me.
It is 10 months. It's like a 9 to 10 week summer now.
Right, right.
And, you know, but that's still 2 months off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that is really important to you, you mm-hmm. will take a lower paying overall job,
right,
in order to have the lifestyle that you want. And so I think, like, especially if you know, love being around students and kids, and that's already like a natural gift and talent, like, and then say you want to start a family and you want to have that kind of that time. I mean, for my mom, that was a huge reason why mm-hmm. she remained a teacher her
right.
whole career, 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to have time with me and my brother
mm-hmm.
and have summers off so that we could do all of the things and every yeah. break matched and all of that. And, you know, could my mom have done something different? Yeah. And then mm-hmm. guess what? She loved it so much that my dad ended up, like, going and being a teacher mm-hmm. too, because he then wanted to be hanging out with us doing right. all the fun stuff that we were doing growing up. So there, for that kind of, you know, when you look at it that way, like,
right,
I would argue teaching is definitely worth the money if you want a certain lifestyle
mm-hmm.
That is very easy to work with inside of a family unit. Mm-hmm. And right. That's like a something that you can't really put a number on.
I would also say though that post COVID, that competition has heated up in the work world with flexible work shifts. You know, a lot more things that are happening out there that you see is family flex time is now being built into, schedules and such in corporations and businesses and things like that. This lifestyle, and I think maybe that might be one of the reasons it's attributing to a teacher shortage, is because those things that teaching just had, right? Like, you get yeah. like a couple of months off, and then, you know, you get the holiday breaks and such. I think more and more businesses, actually, I know, are handling it differently, to where, you know, you have flex time. So you got to come into the office 3 days, but you get a 4 day weekend constantly and these types of things. You know, I've got friends now who, you know, they're able to travel with, you know, their kids, you know, even on off days and such. And they're, you know, marketing companies and all these finance companies and things like that. So yeah, I think, yes, I agree with you on, you know, that, but I think it's losing its edge because of other companies, you know, and that's due to the pandemic as well. People saw, hey, we could still get work done and make money, you know, bottom lines, are being hit, yet we're paying you more, you know. And guess what? The companies are saving more as well, because if you don't have people in your office 1 or 2 days a week, then you probably don't have to clean or the electricity or those types of things, which I still don't understand about schools. I would love like a flex schedule where we have like 4 days and such. So yeah, I agree with all that. I just think it's becoming more and more competitive in the landscape of business. But that's interesting. It was a great question. It was a great question from a young man in class, and it literally stunned me. I do remember 2 years ago, coming out of the pandemic, a kid came out of the blue and he was like, "Man, I'm sorry you don't make, I saw your salary, dude, and I'm sorry." And he was like, he was legit apologizing, and I'm like, "It's all good, man. I'll live, you know." So, yeah, what's you know, dollars and cents here? Well, we won't call it a final thoughts. We'll call it dollars and cents from Allie Privet on this one. This is a great topic, and we
it
went.
It is
there.
A great topic. I feel like this wasn't as, you know, diabolical as it could be. I don't know. Money is like an emotional thing for people. And I guess I would just say, like, you know, if you're in education, like, and you can affect teacher pay, like you're at a level where you can better compensate teachers, do it. Make it happen. They aren't paid enough. I remember getting random bonuses in COVID, and I was like, this is nice. You know, like, well, can we get this more often? Not just because there's a pandemic. And I think there's actually a really good opportunity for school districts, to your point about, like, if they are losing the edge, and we are at a 50-year low of people going into teacher education programs, that how can we create more flexibility in the school system? How can we, you know, kind of compensate our teachers for a livable wage? Like, that should be the bare minimum. And it's sad and disheartening that that isn't the case everywhere. And then, you know, like, what can we learn from the businesses and workplaces that are still thriving and they are doing things differently? Like, we don't have to do things the same way. And, you know, we say it all the time on the podcast, but it's like, it does come down to dollars and cents sometimes between somebody choosing what they really could be really, really good at as an educator, and they choose not to, simply because they don't think they could even live off of that amount of money. Right. And it's like, if that is what's holding people back, then we need to address it.
Yeah.
And sooner rather than later, because you're going to lose good people. And guess what? They might even choose a career that starts them at the same pay, but, like, will increase, you know, much faster. And they're not choosing it because that's what they really want to do. It's because they feel like that's what they need to do to survive. And I think that's a lost opportunity on so many people going into the profession. That is a huge opportunity for those people who want to invest in teachers more and in the educational system more.
And I'll leave our listeners with something that Don Wetrick said on a previous episode, the first one of 2024. Teachers are the biggest economic drivers that you have. So whoever you are out there, if you feel there's more worth, make it happen. But know, like, what we were talking about today, there is possibilities. There are obviously, you know, speed bumps and roadblocks. But it's a conversation that needs to be continued. And, you know, just understanding the pros and cons of this profession, especially as it comes to financing. And see, this is why I failed accounting one time, and then I went back into it later. So now I know. So But great question. I love that question. I can't wait to actually share this episode with the young man who actually, I'm going to tell him, like, you came up with a great, great question, stopped us in our feet. But again, let us know what you all think. You know, if you have any different ideas, we're welcome to them, you know, agree or not agree. Give us a shout out here on the Disrupt Education podcast. And for Ali Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Hopefully you guys are making more than you're spending. And we'll see you next time on the podcast. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Ali Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.